Okay. The one thing about living in a place like I do, I am not used to all the different technological ways of communicating. Mm-hmm. We're a little old school in Madagascar, so to speak. But I wanted to ask first, is there anyone here who's got a connection with Madagascar? Yes? Well, how?
My aunt married a man from Madagascar.
Excellent.
And unfortunately, she died from cancer a year and a half later, so I haven't seen him for a while.
You don't know? Okay.
But he's still a part of the family.
He's part of the family?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Yeah.
My aunt and uncle were missionaries there for about 4 years, and then my their son got it.
Who's your aunt and uncle? Do you mind me asking?
Yeah.
I don't know all names before you say.
Karen Alice Toso.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
How about lemurs? Aren't we all connected?
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of those around. Yeah. Though that is a sad story, is as the environment kind of shifts and deforestation is kind of taking control of the island, they're losing their habitat. But anyone else? Any other connections with Madagascar?
We don't have a connection, uh-huh. but we did plan a trip there, and we actually canceled it like a week before we were in South Africa. We got a little spooked about the bubonic plague going airborne. So I don't know if it was just media or.
It was definitely media, but I'll also tell you that we left. Our program left when that happened.
We were traveling with our kids, so we were like,
But we left more, I think in the end, more of a PR move than a truly in danger reality. But, yeah. So.
Wait, was the fireworks in Madagascar?
Yes.
You can't start with this picture and not tell us.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So I like the rhythm that we have already. Please feel free to just kind of ask questions and interject. I'm going to talk a little bit about myself and a little bit about the program that I work in. And then I want to talk a little bit about some ideas that Malagasy folks have about ancestors and about time. And maybe we can have some, conversation around some of these things. Oops. This is from this year's Independence Day celebration. Independence Day is July 26th. This year is 59 years, a re-independence to Madagascar in 1960. And I guess I did want to start with this picture because it sort of symbolizes to me a little bit of what time is in Madagascar. One of the lessons I'm learning in Madagascar anyway is to really stay in the moment. So if it's time to be happy, celebrate. If it's time to be sad, be sad. But don't get ahead of yourself. Don't get ahead of yourself.
And was independence from England?
France.
Yeah.
So, as I was introduced, my name is Kirsten Laderick. I am a pastor with ELCA. I am the country coordinator for a program called YAGAM, which stands for Young Adults in Global Mission. I love being in Madagascar. I love its little creatures, and I love my friends. I love the different things that it's taught me about myself. Some of those will probably reveal themselves as we go along.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I work, like I said, with a program called Young Adults in Global Mission, and this is the last group of volunteers that just came through this place. And I want to talk to you a little bit about our program and how it works. So Young Adults in Global Mission, they are young adults in their 20s. Lots of times we have an alumni from actually received their time in Malaysia amongst us. Many times our young adults will come right out of college to join us. This is not a picture from when they first got there. They look a little bit more wide-eyed when they first arrived in Madagascar. This is about 7 months into the year-long service that they do. So I work with them. I do everything that needs to happen for them to have a year of being in country, being integrated, learning language, being safe, thinking, praying, and growing.
I have a question.
Yes.
What are we looking at behind? Is that a farm or what's growing back
there?
That's
rice.
That's rice.
That's rice.
And those outback buildings are.
Yeah, that's rice. And this is, rice is everywhere in our land. Some people have told me it looks like Ireland. It can be so green. I've never been to Ireland, so I can't tell you. Well, this picture might not be, but it does get really green, particularly after the rainy season, when everything just greens up even more than on a normal basis.
Are they learning French or?
They learn Malagasy.
Malagasy.
Yep. So, I'll read this. This is something that one of our volunteers wrote at that time that picture was taken. This year has done stuff to me. Maybe it hasn't changed me completely, but then maybe it has. I can't unsee or undo or unknow the beauty and brokenness of this world, and honestly, I don't really know what to do with it yet. My heart has been so thoroughly affected by this place, and it hurts in a terrible, awful, but right kind of way. I share this with you. This is the Yaga program is not for the lighthearted. It's for not only being in relationship and being with our sisters and brothers around the world, but in happy times, but in reality, in the truth of life, and in the hard parts of life. So, and this is the group that's coming that has absolutely no idea. So I just met them in April, and they will arrive. They're actually going to head to the in-country, in Chicago training. They will arrive tomorrow. So they are new and really excited in their own places right now. But for a year of Yagam, just to kind of give you more of an idea about what we do, they will join a congregation. They will be part of a congregation. This is a typical Sunday. This is not a special Sunday in this particular congregation. They will join a family. So this is one of our volunteers from this year with the family that she lived with and laughed with and cried with for the year. Typically we teach English in Madagascar. We teach in different settings, elementary, primary, secondary, schools for the deaf and blind. We work at farm schools and environmental schools. We work at hospitals and clinics. We get to do all sorts of things. And they get to just join life. Some of the big things that many volunteers get to talk about a lot is just the activity of washing your own clothes. How many of you are doing all your hand washing these days? And I really love that by the end of the year, it's always, I will never complain about washing my clothes again. But choirs, church choirs, that's the big youth event that the Malagasy Lutheran Church has. And then just joining in with the challenges of just being in Madagascar. This is one of our volunteers with a group of female theologians at the seminary. I mentioned, some of you have heard, that I am the only only female pastor amongst 1,500 male pastors in the Malagasy Lutheran Church. Women have been able to go to seminary and receive the same education for the last 40 years, but they can't do as many things with it as their male counterparts can. So that's a challenge and a struggle for them, but they still persevere. And they inspired me, I'll tell you that. And then they just live. I love this picture because it's actually not a really high quality picture, but to me it just says everything. This is life. Beautiful and dirty and wonderful together. Huh. You know?
So do they choose Madagascar or does Madagascar choose them?
Madagascar chooses them. So they apply, or similar to the old model, the Peace Corps, where you apply to the program and then we review, see, do you think you're going to be, this person's going to be a good fit? Then we will put them into, we will invite them to come into an event we call DIP, Discernment, Interview, and Placement. So they will come to Chicago, meet with all of the country coordinators from the various programs around the world. There are 9 of them right now. And they will meet 2 of them, and then as a group of country coordinators, we'll discern which country then ultimately they end up with. At that point, they are given the opportunity to say yes or no and come along the ride. So we do get no's. This year, that group of eight that you saw, there was a knight who said, next time. All right. So I want to kind of talk a little bit. So that's kind of like, I just want to talk about that, not only because that's what I do, and tell you to tell all of the 21 to 29-year-old friends that they need to think about Yagam in their life, but to kind of give you a little bit of the context of, you know, how we are involved. Not only for myself am I involved with the Yagams, but I do represent the ELCA in different ways and show up in different times as a pastor, sometimes as a woman theologian, depending on the context. But if that's a topic and those are things that interest you, we'll talk more about that on Friday, or Thursday, on Thursday at the same time. All right, where's Matta?
Down.
Oh,
down over.
Down over there.
Down over?
Down and over to the right.
What's that?
Indian Ocean.
Indian Ocean. Absolutely.
Above the Seychelles.
Down over.
Yeah, Seychelles is just north of Madagascar, or maybe a little bit more than just north. Oh, they gave me a little thing up there, the Seychelles. Yeah, and sometimes people know more about these islands you can't see. Seychelles, and this is Reunion and Mauritius. Those are pretty popular, like, tourist destinations. A lot more people go to these teeny little places. For example, Mauritius. Its population is 1.3 million. How many visitors, tourists, do you think it gets in a year? Any idea? 1.3. Oh. Madagascar is 25 million people, and we're lucky to get 500,000. I think it's actually closer to a quarter. So, yeah, it's a very, very big difference. But then Mauritius is also one of the most developed African nations that is there. So. All right. Okay, so this is a map of Madagascar. It's not as green as this would make you think it is. I mentioned, someone asked, said about the lemurs, and I mentioned that it's now about 80% of the original forest is gone. And I recently read an article that said, like, this next 5 years is literally do or die for this island. Environmentally, which is just, it's a very scary proposition. I live in the capital city, which is kind of in these highlands, at least up here. The program has been anywhere from the tip to the north, to the tip of the south, here, it's just pretty much been all over the island. And the topography, as you can kind of see, is going to look a little bit different. I'm going to show you just a few pictures. This is pretty, you probably have heard of the baobabs. Yeah, that's pretty well known. That's out to the west. Some more of those rice fields that we saw from the beginning. Are these pictures coming across well?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Some coast areas. We are a tropical island, and it definitely is. Some of the river, more inland rivers, and that is a dwelling, that is a home. And then I think this has a little video just to give you. But we also have a city. This is not, this little video in this area is not, but a probably 10-minute walk from where I live, right in the middle of the city. So we have everything from sort of desolate to very packed and busy and too much going on city life.
Kirsten, do you happen to know a state you could compare the size of Madagascar to?
Yeah, about Texas.
Okay.
So it's big. It's big. It's the fourth largest island in the world. Yeah. Yeah.
And what's the population?
25 million, about. They're doing a census. At least last year they were doing a census. They came to my house and I signed all the papers. So I'm curious to see what they actually come up with, because it's been a long time since they've actually done an official census in Madagascar. So those 25 million people are divided into about 22 different tribes all around. They all have their different cultures, their different like traditional costumes, dance, dialect, and I just thought I'd just share just a little bit of these. This is from a choir concert. So Malagasy folks are very proud of the different cultural pieces. And it's not just their own cultural piece, like not just, these are Merina, which are Highlanders. So it doesn't have to be just Highlanders, or just Merina that would sing Merina songs, or the next one, the next song, and you'll see some, you just see some of the costumes. But this is a typical part of one of those choirs. I said that the volunteers would be part of a choir. A choir concert, people, is going to be like 3 hours.
Wow.
I'm not even kidding, because one of the hours has got to be, I'll show you the next one here. This one will get a little louder, though. So I'll pause. The first hour would be like all Jesus music. The second hour would be like all of culture music and different tribes. And then the third hour would often be like classical music, singing in Latin or German or something. And these are all just, these are fun costumes. They're not absolutely, you know, this is not what a typical costume looks like, but they're sort of interpretation for one of their shows. This was actually a 30-year celebration of that particular choir, and it was quite a big event. And you can just see the different headwear and different kind of costuming, and those kind of are just from all over the island. But anyway, so singing and dancing, and these are church choirs, but this is not happening in the church because you do not dance like this in the church. We stay very serious and very still in the church setting. So, yeah. Is that fun? Or you want more? No. Okay. So, a little bit about some history of this place. And this is all kind of trying to give a groundwork so that some of the ancestors and the time things can fit together. So again, we said that this is where Madagascar is. So the original folks of Madagascar, it's believed that they come from like this area. The language is actually Indo-Austrian. Is that right? Austro-Indian. And if you hear someone speaking Indonesian, there is a lot of reminiscence of Malagasian Indonesian and the appearance of people as well. But it's believed that the outriggers canoes made it all the way here. So it's kind of a really unique piece of history. It's only been, it's like they arrived somewhere like 1300 to 2000 years ago. There are people who have also come from Africa and the Middle East and India, but the vast majority of people and the beginnings of people came from Indonesia. And of course, there's, with the French colonization, there's also the French folks around. And the missionaries. There's Americans and Norwegians and all that as well. So jump ahead to the 1800s history, if you will. And that's the time of the kings and the queens. So this is just called the Ruva, which is the queen. That was the queen's palace. The kings and the queens and the prime ministers ruled the land of Madagascar up until 1896, when the French came in and exiled the last queen to Algeria. In that time, in the 1800s, there was a really interesting relationship between the church and the missionaries who would come in. Some queens were very open to accepting missionaries, and other queens, well, this church right here is one of the four martyr churches because she had the missionaries or folks, more than just missionaries, mostly people who decided to believe the missionaries, pushed off this cliff. And there are, like I said, four different churches around in the city that are representative of that part of history. This is the very first Lutheran church that came, or that was built. So the, let me go back and say, so the English and the Welsh came first to the land, to the island, and they kind of hit the brunt of the martyrs and malaria and all the other challenges that hit their life. And the Norwegians came, the Lutheran Norwegians came and had their first worship service at this very church in 1867. So the Lutherans have been there for 150 years. And because of that Norwegian-American connection, the Americans got involved in the 1880s. So we've been kind of over there ever since. And we're going to jump a little bit and talk a little bit about some politics that played into all of what's going on, too. So the Queen left, I told you, in 1896. The French came in, took over the land, claimed it as theirs for a long time. The their independence came in 1960, when a lot of different French colonies regained their independence. From 1960 till now has been a pretty much a continual decline in the state of affairs for Madagascar and for the people there. So Madagascar at this point, or at that point in 1960, was actually, except for the fact that it was colonized, and that had all of its horriblenesses around it, and very brutal colonization, they were actually in a much better economic state, both as a country and as individuals. Madagascar is now one of the four poorest countries in the world. They went, they got their independence. They, in the 1970s, they started to kind of align themselves with Russia and communism and socialism. So we kind of, as our church stayed involved, but the United States kind of stepped away from Madagascar for a number of years. That ended in, I believe, the 80s, mid-80s, late 80s, or 90s. I'm going to jump to, and there was finally a move towards, like, moving towards the States and being connected with the world outside of Madagascar. And in came this gentleman, who, Marc Ravalomanana, who came in via a coup against all of sort of the transition government from the Soviet to being more of a quote-unquote democracy, which has not really taken complete hold. But he violently took over, was elected supposedly, but violently took over because the leader would not step down. That was in 2002. 2009, this same thing happened with this guy, but he led a coup to oust him, sent him to South Africa. And when that happened, the world cut Madagascar off yet again. He stayed in power from 2000, and this is Rajoelina, and Rajoelina stayed in power from 2009 to 2013, when they finally agreed with the help of the world that we would have this new election that would be transparent, and neither of these two would be able to vote or be able to be on the ballot. So Harry came in as the winner of the election, but it was really actually convenient because he was the finance minister for this guy. But anyway, he came in a quote-unquote fair election, and in the January 2014, he was elected, and all the world said, okay, you're back in because you followed the rules that we put in front of you. So then this past year, 2018, the fall of 2018, for a new president to come in 2019, we're all a little bit anxious because this guy, who's actually a former DJ, and this guy, who's actually a former yogurt maker, were rising in popularity again. And we knew that the last time that they were together, bridges were blown up, buildings were set on fire, tear gas, people were killed. But Madagascar, I'm happy to say, their environment might be going down the tubes, but the politics might be going in a better direction, because at least, whether we like the outcome or not, these two shook hands in public on TV the day that the DJ was finally declared the official winner.
Is the environment, can I ask a question about the environment? Is it deforestation for palm oil or for fuel or what?
Charcoal.
Mm. No, I don't know.
It's mostly deforestation for two things: illegal lumber logging. So all the precious woods. You can go and travel around the country and see so many places that look like they're carpeted because they've been so well cleaned out, and you can see that from miles, just miles. And you might be at first think, well, oh, it's kind of lovely because it's all now green, right? But it's just, it literally just like a carpet of grass because everything's been taken. That's happening in certain areas. Other places, people are taking it down because you need a place to make food for you to eat. And the population at 25 million a couple generations ago was at 8 million. Mm-hmm. 8 million. Yeah. So it's gotten, you know, it's really how are we going to feed our people kind of thing. There's also then the need to feed the cows. And so that slash and burn agriculture, which brings up those green grasses that the cows like to eat. You see that. You also see a whole trade of charcoal or development. So, you can go on a hike and you're just like, oh, look, we're making charcoal here, this is getting cut down here. But again, these are the livelihoods. Currently, this guy said, okay, now you may not cut down any trees. And that was the whole plan. So now it's illegal to cut down trees. When there are places that have been planted for cutting, because that you do need that as well, right? But there's also no one's managing it whatsoever. So, I mean, that's not my area of expertise, but from just a layperson walking around, traveling around the world, or the island, which I do a ton, nothing looks any different. Mm-hmm. And another part of this politics in this realm is it's so corrupt. So we're at this, our nation rates 24 on the corruption index. Do you know how to read the corruption index? 100 is 100% free of corruption. Nothing is corrupt about a society. 0 is 100% corruption. There's nothing uncorrupt about a society. And Madagascar sits at a 24. So it's really hard, you know, on top of that to manage such a situation like that.
What's the United States?
86.
Oh. What was the question?
She asked what was the United States. Yeah. Okay.
And who's the guy on the bottom line?
He's the former president who more or less served as a transition between the rivalry of these two. So he just got done. Yeah. Yeah. So then that kind of just brings out this whole, I just want to show this picture because to me it's just the starkness of the reality in Madagascar of the haves and the have-nots. The haves are so small, the have-nots are so large, but they're just, it's as striking as this picture, this home to that office building. Yeah. All right. Well, let's try and talk a little bit about spirits and ancestors and God. And what I'm going to talk about today comes like more out of like the traditional beliefs than the Christian beliefs. I'll talk more about the Christian part of this tomorrow if you're interested when I talk about the Fifa Wasna. Madagascar at this moment is 42% Christian, 50% traditional beliefs or ancestral beliefs, and 8% Islam, Muslim. But that the traditional beliefs really do just run through everyone and everything. It's not like people became Christian and just stopped. You know, it's a cultural, you're too far as a culture. So there's all these stories that just abound through, you know, and some of them are silly and some are taken as fact, and sometimes as an outsider, I don't even know which ones to take that way. Like, I think I've shared this story even in this space a couple years ago, like the baobabs, these are the famous baobab trees. You know, the story is that, you know, the devil came and flipped them up, pulled them up and turned them upside down, and that's why they look the way they do, right? So, the spirits of the of this. I wrote in, on the write-up, just something silly about, like, why you shouldn't eat pork.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before you cross the river?
Before you cross the river. So, when I first got to Madagascar, I was treated like this fragile doll that couldn't manage anything by my host community. And it took me a long time to kind of break out of everything. And so at the beginning, I was doing a lot of sneaking around. And like, not like, I don't mean that in a really bad way, but like, just literally, so I could experience things, because they keep, oh no, it's not safe for you. Oh no, you'll get sick. Oh no, don't do that. Oh no. So we were out traveling at this to a city that was about a day and a half away from the capital where I live. And it's one of my favorite places to this day in this city. It's called Manakara, and I managed to sneak away from my driver / self-appointed bodyguard and protector. And I just went exploring. And I wanted to get to the actual beach, because Madagascar is on the Indian Ocean, but there is this river, this Pangalese Canal actually, that runs through the area. Now, what is not in this picture is this bridge that you used to be able to walk over, but is now like a bridge that looks more like this, meets like this, so it's not very effective. So because we're in Madagascar and people are very, just take care of whatever happens, there's this lovely boat system that gets you across the water. And I told him that after I came clean and confessed my sins to my driver, about leaving this place and all the people I had met and the things I had seen. And he said, oh, Pastora, you cannot do this. And I'm thinking to myself, why? Because you have to think about the river. And I thought to myself, well, maybe he's afraid that I don't know how to swim. You know, because this isn't very far. Right? Anyone with just a little bit of swimming can figure out how to get across the way. You know, I thought about the boat, which probably wasn't in the best of shape, so maybe it was a legitimate worry that would be what the problem was for him. But it wasn't. It was the fact that I had eaten pork at lunch. And to this day, I tell you, I do not understand why. Mm-hmm. But he was absolutely adamant. And this is a leader in the church who is just has shunned so many of the traditional understandings of life, but still believes in maybe there's something to it. Who am I to say that he's wrong? Right? That if I have pork before I cross or I'm on water, I might be in trouble. So luckily, this is mostly a vegetarian place, right? So we don't have any problems when we leave. Yeah, but that's it. And that stories like that, just, they abound. I'm just gonna show you this. So this is actually right after, not that long after a cyclone came through. So those cyclones that are so dangerous, they're so important too, right? bringing the water back. But I want to show you because of the rice fields that are so lovely and typical in my part of the country of Madagascar in particular. There's rice fields everywhere, but the tiered rice fields, that's in the mountains, obviously it can't be everywhere. So and that's
right. Just to clarify, a cyclone is the equivalent of a hurricane.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. What I want to tell you about, I tell you a story about a land that once was owned by a baza, which is a foreigner. I'm a baza. You would all be bazas coming to visit. But it was owned by this large area of rice land that was unplanted, gone fallow for a number of years after the man had died. And this is not my story, it is a true story, but it's been told a number of times, so who knows all the details, but the general gist is so true. So the man had died, and the farmers who were working on the land had stopped working because there was no one there. The wife of the owner was too old to work it as well. There was a movement in Madagascar, especially during that communist time, which this time the story took place, to take back the lands from the foreign owners, which in my opinion should be more of the work that's happening now, but it's actually going in the reverse. But there was a movement to take back these lands. And so this group of eager college students from Capital City came to this man and came to the farmers and said, we know the right way in all the paperwork and what you need to do to take this land back, to be able to work it. You're hungry, you need employment, you need work, you need these things. And the farmer said, yeah, let us think about it. Let us get back to you. So over a course of several months, the farmers and the students would come together, and every time the farmers would say, there's a problem, but wouldn't identify the problem. But the students also, they're Malagasy, they're patient. They also recognize that you need to let people work through there and work through their problems, but they were starting to get frustrated. Like, why can't, this is so obvious. These people are starving. They need a way to be able to grow their own food so they can exist. The land is here. We have a remedy for it. What's happening? Finally, the farmers grew in enough faith of these students who were, basically foreigners to them, because these were countryside farmers and this was students from the big city of Tana. But they finally grew in enough faith to confess to the students that they were worried about what would happen once they started working the land. Because the dead farmer had now become what?
A spirit,
an ancestor. And not only had he become an ancestor or spirit of this land and of this people, he was a horrible person during life. So he had treated these people very, very badly. And so they were worried that, something's going to happen, right? So they had to go to, they went to a traditional healer to find a remedy. So what they ended up doing is sacrificing an ox at the tomb of the landowner to appease the spirits. And then they were able to proceed with the plan, which doesn't sound like a crazy story, from our perspective. You had to kill this animal to be able to move forward on this? But the thing is, the belief in the ancestors is so strong, and luckily those students understood that had they proceeded, had they been able to convince those farmers that it was okay to proceed, and they stayed with the, went the traditional or the formal channels, the very first broken tool, the very first broken tool, what would have happened?
They'd have quit.
They'd have quit. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the ancestors would have spoken. So they say the ancestors, you say your family, we say our family lives in our house and is buried together in the tomb. And the power from life to death is almost as if your power increases in death. So to you must be cognizant of the ancestors and all that you do and all that you are. Because to not be in that tomb, to not get to that tomb, is a horrible potential outcome for a Malagasy person. Because you have to get there to become one of the ancestors.
How would you not be able to get to the tomb?
Mm. You can not be able to get to the tomb if you live a reckless life. Like if you were a thief or a crook or you've been imprisoned.
And then when you died, they would say, we won't allow him in the tomb.
Right.
Is that the family that makes the decision or the tribe?
The family that, you know, it's the family and the tribe. It's all kind of, and every tribe is different too on how the sort of rules and flexibility and forgiveness work. But the fear is real. The fear is real. And so you have a very homogeneous way of thinking all the time because you don't want to do anything to upset the ancestors or the rhythm or the way to finally become an ancestor. The other thing, so you have to be considered a full human, and so a child that's not grown old enough, doesn't have teeth, or maybe hasn't been circumcised yet. Different tribes again have different rules around that. It's an interesting reality. So sometimes you can find tribes that aren't as attached. They're very good to their babies. They're good to their babies. But you find sort of a sense of detachment, which is very interesting.
It may be too much to answer, but so many cultures with missionaries coming in, they use that to their advantage to take what the beliefs were of, say, in Peru or other places to bring people along to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
To not just sever the old ties.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work with the missionaries and now currently with Lutherans and Christians in a country that's got these traditional things?
If I am understanding your question correctly.
Not a great question.
So no. It's a good question, but I just want to...
How does it work?
Yeah, so it works differently for the different groups. So you have... You have the 42% of Christians, right, and about evenly split between the Catholics, the Reforms, which end up usually being from the Presbyterian Church, and then the Lutherans. Okay. The Catholics, with all of their sort of understanding of saints, mm-hmm. have a much easier relationship with the ancestors. The Lutherans and the Protestants, we'll actually talk about that more tomorrow. That's part of the Fifu Wazan on how they've kind of worked their own understanding of how this comes together. So within those two branches of Christianity, there is their own sort of, you gave us the gospel, we understand life this way. And that's what the Fifu Wazan movement is, the kind of a coming together of that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I have just a quick question about tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
So do folks in Madagascar see themselves as like part of a country, or do they really see themselves as part of a tribe?
Tribe over country. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tribe over country, but still very proud to be Malagasy. And proud to be like Malagasy over being African, because they are considered part of the African continent and African country.
Okay.
Yeah. So, sometimes that's it goes from being not a problem at all and being very cohesive to being, there are places on the island where they don't even address tribe. It's like, kind of like, do not, like if they had this church choir thing going on, they wouldn't have that hour of tribes because that stirs up too much in their communities. They've just said, okay, we'll just kind of step away from tribe. That's not the rule by any stretch, but those communities do exist on the island as well. All right, I want to talk about, can I talk about time?
Yes.
Time from behind. Oh, time. We're always pressed for time. What are some other phrases we say about time? What's our, in our Western culture? Not enough time, time flies.
Wasting time.
Wasting time.
Running out of time.
Saving time.
Running out of time, saving time. There's all sorts of ways
you're trying.
My time. All sorts of time ways you're trying to manipulate time, right? Yeah. And when we think of the future, is that in front of us or behind us? Where, how does it? We're checking out
forward. We'll do blah blah.
We're moving forward to the future. Okay. Yeah, and when we see that timeline, when we picture a timeline, do we picture ourselves like moving through it? Kind of? Maybe not. Like, because we're kind of working towards the yeah. So this has been the hardest thing for me to get my head around, I will be honest, with living in Madagascar. So the past is in front and the future is behind.
What?
The past is in front and the future is behind.
Because you can see the past, right?
Because you can see the past and the present. And not only is the past in the front and the future behind, but I am standing still and time is coming through me. So when I say Happy New Year, and I want to say this right, in Malagasy, I'd say, where am I? Arahaba fa trachni nitona. Congratulations for being reached by the year. Congratulations for being reached by the year. Happy New Year. So the year, the time has caught up with us. What do you think about that?
Wild. Wow, that is like totally different.
I don't get it at all.
You don't get it at all?
Right.
Nope. That's nothing.
No, I like it though. I mean, it's sort of freeing.
How?
How? How might it be freeing? Any thoughts?
You live in the present.
You live in the present? Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to just talk. What's that?
Time has no power in the way that it's
here. Yeah, time doesn't have the same power. And time, like, shows up when something happens.
You have no control over it. It's reaching you. It's coming to you.
Right.
You aren't going into it. I mean, we have this idea. We create our futures.
Right.
We're going forward. This is the future.
We're stressed out all the time about it. We're planning for it all the time.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm not in any way, you know, suggesting that this is like the superior way of thinking about time, but this is how time. So this also means that I'm waiting around a lot, right?
Yeah.
You know, in my perception, I'm waiting around a lot. But time hasn't caught up with us, right? Or the event hasn't arrived yet. So, like, for the start of this, I was like, oh no, 4 o'clock, I better be ready. But does it start on time? Should it start on Malagasy time? Should it start on, you know, Bizat time? You know, what time should it start? Because that is the language we use. Like, so if I say it's going to start at, you know, let's start at 2, then my host would always say, so is that Malagasy time or Bizat time? So Malagasy time is when the event starts, which would mean something more like from 2, whenever. Could be 2 minutes after 2, or it could be forever. And that's what it, like, and what I love about it is it is you're able to stay in a space, stay present to a reality. So I want to talk about, just give you an example that I have recently lived through in a positive way. So do you guys follow football, soccer? Mm-hmm. So the Malagasy team has never been to the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And they have actually never been to the Africa Cup of Nations either. Which is, you know, kind of a qualifying event, you know, for the cup, until this year.
Ooh.
So exciting. This is like literally 2 month old news, not even.
Yeah.
So did you hear about this? So this is the team with their coach, and these are like, I'm sure they'll still be up all over Madagascar. They were so excited. So they went all the way to the quarterfinals. You know, the first time they ever are able to do anything, they go all the way to the quarterfinals. It was amazing. And I'm not a sports fan, like, almost at all, but it was amazing. And people got so excited about it. The president of the country even was chartering planes to take people so that there would be fans in the stadium. So I don't know if you've ever seen this African Cup. Like, these games are not even more near sold out. There's just a few people here and there. So all of this was happening, and so they made it to the quarterfinal, but that was the end of their time, and the country went nuts. I thought, oh, are people gonna be sad that, you know, they didn't go further? The game was done. They were, what did they lose, 3-1 or something like this? A definitive loss. They were outmatched, no question. And the game was done, and the cheering erupted all over Tana, and all over anywhere, any city you're in, you know, beeping of the horns and people just doing their thing. So that following Saturday, I was having a going away party for a friend of mine who was also a missionary, worked with Dan Mission. And I said to her, Gieto, what do you want to do? You know, are there some people that you're not able to say goodbye to, or you want to have a special gathering? That would be great. So that's what we did. So we said, she said, let's do it at 3:30 at your house. We'll just have snacks. I said, perfect. So that was the plan, and then we realized that this team was being flown back to Madagascar to arrive at 3:00 in the airport in Antananarivo. Well, Agito also had a sister who had been there who she had to get to the airport. So she sort of got caught behind the traffic and everything that was happening. The airport from where I live, half an hour. On a bad day, an hour, hour and a half. The team who was trying to get from the airport to a location, again, another different direction from before, but about a 10-minute walk from where I am, arrived in the airport at 3:00, did not make it to the proposed destination until 10 p.m. We're sitting waiting for my friend. You can see this like bright sun going on. And this is about 3:30, 4:00 when everyone got there, or some of the people got there anyway. And Agato starts calling. Oh, I'm behind the traffic. And we're watching on the news. This is kind of a blurry picture, but this is the nighttime version, but we're watching a daytime version of this through the entire route from the airport to the stadium. So we're just on the phone with, don't go that way, go this way, you'll get around this way, get around. So she ends up getting around stuff and finally, and Agato's the tall woman here on the left, finally making it to my apartment at 7 o'clock. So these people who came to say goodbye to their friend waited 3.5 hours. Not one complaint, not one worry. I have a whole bunch of new friends I never met because they just hung out at my house. But it was, I don't know, that whole day I was just like, this is incredible. This whole city has just stopped because there was something worth celebrating. There was a moment of pride to savor and to relish in that we don't normally get. So we're gonna do it. And then this little microcosm of people was doing the same thing. This woman, Gato, who I am dying has left me, this is one of my best friends, has touched us all so deeply and profoundly. There's nothing else that we can imagine doing but waiting. Wait till 10, midnight, which is, by the way, when the fireworks finally went off that night for the celebration. But anyway, some thoughts about, and some facts and some random things about Madagascar. Any questions or comments?